little seething. Carrie brings him a glass of water and a pack of frozen peas for his jaw. She goes back and returns with glasses for me and Layla, too. I touch her hand and say, "Seriously, thank you." She smiles and nods. All is fair in love and Warren. I don't need no knights in shining armor. Ain't no horses in the hood. I killed chivalry myself with a pocket knife, a mean mug, and a bad mood. I don't need you to fight my battles, 'cause I've already won this war. Got brothers hollering at me from the corner, then curse me out when they get ignored. But if you step to that brother who disrespected me with his eyes, pull out your fists and throw an uppercut like you're some superhero in disguise, I'll look at you twice, maybe three times or four, secretly cheer you from the sidelines as you throw another brother down on the floor. You've got this whole white audience watching this fight like some sport. So to whom do I pledge allegiance? To my heart or to this war? 26. My stomach sinks when I hear sirens coming down the block. It's not the same as hearing sirens in my hood. In this part of Brooklyn, with its giant oak trees and multi-million dollar brownstones, police and ambulance sirens mean that something really did go down. A police car pulls up to the curb outside Carrie's house. I just hope no one tells the police that two black boys at this party started all this mess and it ended in a fight. Carrie is pacing up and down the living room. She's on the phone with her mother, who's on the other side of the world in Paris. Soon, two cops are at the door, and I tell Darius to go hide in the bathroom. "Why?" he asks as he holds the pack of frozen peas to his jaw. "Because," is all I say. But Carrie doesn't let them in. She insists that everything's okay and the party's over. The cops mumble something, and in seconds, they're gone. "Wow, that's it?" I say as Carrie walks back into the living room. "What do you mean, that's it?" Darius says. I sigh and shake my head at Darius. "You don't get it," I whisper. "Yes, I do," he says. "That's it, and that's all that should happen." I shake my head. "Different planet," I say. "What you think should happen is what actually happens." He just narrows his eyes at me. There's a small scratch across his forehead, and his lip is busted. His face is all wound up, and he winces as he gets up from the couch. I stare at him with almost new eyes, because he's not as cocky when he's in pain. Layla is sprawled out on another leather couch, and she looks a hot mess too. "I gotta get her home," I say. "Try to make her eat," Carrie says. "And wait, let me get you something." She rushes back to the kitchen and comes back with a plastic bag and hands it to me. "She's probably gonna throw up again, so you should be prepared." Darius sits in the front seat to give Layla space to stretch out her legs in the back of the cab. She cracks stupid jokes during the whole ride, and she almost throws up on me and all over the back seat, so Carrie's plastic bag comes in handy. She is so wasted. "How am I going to get her past my parents?" I ask Darius. "How about if the cab lets us off around the corner or down the block?" Darius asks while massaging his sore hand. "She can walk it off." "Are you kidding me? My whole neighborhood has eyes." I get a text from Janae, letting me know that everybody's home except for me and Layla. I text her back that Layla's in trouble, so Marisol came up with some lie about Layla being at some friend's party and me promising to pick her up. For whatever reason, my parents always believe Marisol. "She needs water, food, and sleep," Darius says. "She'll just have to deal with the consequences later." My stomach twists even tighter at the thought of having to explain all this to my parents. They won't get mad. They'll be disappointed. They'll blame themselves. They'll think back on all the things they've done wrong as young parents. Papi will get even stricter with all of us, and he'll probably cut back on his work hours even more, just so he can keep an eye out on us girls. "Oh my God," I mumble, holding my head in my hand. "It'll be that bad, huh?" Darius asks. "Okay, how about we bring her to my house?" "No way. Your parents and my parents will definitely catch us." "They're asleep. No one will notice, promise." He shrugs. "Look, Layla can chill there for a while until she can at least stand straight. You can sneak back home with her before dawn. I shake my head, knowing that at this point, we'll still get in trouble. It's just a matter of how much trouble. I text Janae, letting her know that Layla is okay, and beg her not to say a word to our parents. I call Mama, and she doesn't answer, thank goodness. I lean back against the seat and exhale as the cab drives up to our block. We reach the side door to the Darcy house. My heart pounds as I look all up and down the block for any of Papi's friends or Mama's friends too. If Mama and Papi come knocking on the Darcy's door and find Layla drunk, so be it. But if I can save them a heart attack or two, I will. Darius helps Layla out of the car and walks her to the side door while I cover Layla's mouth because now she's singing some random song. Soon we're in a lit foyer with hooks along the walls and a metal rack filled with shoes that I notice are Darius's. He fumbles with his keys again, opening a second door that leads down into the basement. There's a black leather couch in the center with a giant flat-screen TV along the wall. Layla quickly plops her body down, groans, and mumbles something. This is my room. Please make yourself at home. Darius leaves and walks up a flight of stairs at the other end of the basement, and I kneel down in front of Layla to rub her forehead. You're stupid, you know that? I say. She moans. I'm sorry, Zuri. Warren kept giving you drinks, huh? No, I kept asking for them. I only had two. Stay away from Warren, please. Why? He likes me, and I like him. I don't care. Stay away from him. You can't tell me what to... Ow! She rubs her head and squints her eyes. See, that's what you get. If Mama and Papi find out about this, it won't matter who likes who. The only boyfriends you'll have are the four walls in our bedroom, I say while rubbing her back. And please don't throw up on this couch and give Darius a reason to hate me more. I don't hate you, Zuri, Darius says as he walks into the room with a lined trash bin and places it in front of the couch. He hands Layla a glass of water, and I glance up at him. He looks away. I look away. You got 2 hours, Layla, I say as she curls herself up on the couch and closes her eyes. And then you gotta pull yourself together so we can go home. She doesn't answer. I shake my head, stand up, and nudge her gently. She moans, so I leave her alone. It hadn't crossed my mind that I'd have to wait for Layla while she sobers up. I didn't ever think I'd be in the Darcy house again, especially after our fight. I look around his room and realize that it's not at all what I expected. It's way more... him. A video game console and controller sit on a gray rug in front of the couch. Canvases, some blank, some painted on, some drawn on, are all over the basement. Some are propped against the walls, some are hanging, and some are stacked up on a wide wooden table in the far corner of the basement. There are glass jars of paintbrushes in all sizes along the edge of the table. In another corner are a bass guitar and a keyboard. Darius walks through a door at the end of the basement, and I can spot a giant bed in that room. He comes out with a plaid blanket, and he gently throws it over Layla. Thank you, I say. I cross my arms because I don't know what else to do with myself in this place. Then I ask, you paint? Why didn't you tell me? I took painting classes at school and I liked it. It calms me a little, but playing music energizes me. Balance. Then he points to a closed door on the opposite side of the basement. That's Ainsley's room over there. So it's like you two have a whole basement apartment to yourselves? I say. Yeah, we designed it that way. I mean, that's why my parents wanted a big house. We lived in a small two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, so... So I don't know what you're talking about, because me and my sister share one room. Zuri, he sighs, still massaging his hand. I can't change anything about my life. Sorry, I say, knowing exactly what he means by that. I sigh, look down, then look up at him. You should do something about that. Do you have ice? He walks to a dark corner and turns on a light. He opens a small fridge and pulls out an ice tray. He holds an ice cube in his hand. I laugh and shake my head. Let me help you with that. You got some sort of towel? He motions for me to follow him into his bedroom. I hesitate a little bit, but my legs have already agreed because I walk in to see how beautiful his room is. High windows line the walls. There are hanging plants everywhere, and a giant fish tank sits along the wall. His bed is pushed up against the far wall, and it's actually neat, with the covers pulled up and everything. The sound of running water from the fish tank makes the whole room feel peaceful. Shelves are mounted on every available surface, with books stacked up to the ceiling. So you're an artist, a musician, a green thumb, a fish lover, and a reader? I ask. That's sure a lot of stuff for someone who once told me they like empty spaces. What can I say? It's my little oasis, he says, plopping down on his bed. Your oasis in the hood, huh? It's just so different from the rest of the house. Well, I'm different from the rest of the house, he says. He motions for me to come sit next to him, but I don't. I spot a giant floor pillow in the corner, pick it up, and place it a little close to his bed, but not too close. Different? Could have fooled me. I did fool you, didn't I? He says, pulling open a dresser, grabbing a t-shirt, and wrapping it around the ice. He holds it to his hand. Sit on the bed. I don't want my guest sitting on the floor. So we switch spots, and his bed is the softest thing I've ever sat on in my life, but I don't let myself get too comfortable. I spot a picture of him as a little boy on his dresser, scrawny, wearing glasses, and with a thick book in his hand. I sigh and roll my eyes. I guess you did fool me, but you really didn't have to get into a fight with Warren. Yes, I did. I've been waiting for another reason to bust him in his face. Oh, so this wasn't about looking out for my sister. It was. I wouldn't want what happened to Georgia to happen to Layla, he says. Layla? I ask. What about me? He could have pulled that shit with me. I wouldn't let him, but still. He bites his busted bottom lip and hangs his head down. I didn't think of that. You were so... He inhales. So what? So tough? So bitchy? I smile. And too what? Too stuck up? Too conceited? All of the above. He cocks his head back a little bit when he says this, but his eyes are soft, as if he's owning up to everything that he is, or everything I thought he was. What are you saying? I was right about you? I thought you fooled me. I say, looking down at my own hands and not at his soft eyes. I thought I was trying to fool you. He inhales and leans in a little bit. Zuri, you don't think I know that this is the hood and guys around here would be messing with me and my brother? You don't think I knew that I'd have a reputation as soon as I stepped out of that car? And I knew it wouldn't be street rep either. I saw it all over your face, Zuri. You couldn't stand me. And according to you, Warren was your boy in the hood. Who was I to mess that up for you? I bite the inside of my cheek, still not looking at Darius. There's some old blue nail polish left on my thumbnail, and I pick at that. Hey, Darius says, lowering his head to make eye contact with me. My body starts to feel weird, and I know this feeling. My insides are melting into sweet, gooey, sticky honey, so I quickly stand up from his bed. I should check on Layla. Give her a few minutes, he says, while trying to get up too. He scrunches his face and holds the side of his belly. I reach for his hand and help him up. When he does, we're standing face to face, sort of, because he's taller than me. His lips are where my forehead is, so he quickly kisses it as if that's what I'm asking him to do. I step back. I'm sorry, he says. I didn't mean to. It's okay. I say, I can't be in here. He grabs my hand. I get it. It's cool. Let me show you something. I give him a surprised look as he pulls me out of his bedroom, past a sleeping Layla, and up the stairs leading out of the basement. He turns around and places his finger over his lips, as if I would dare say anything now. The house is dark, but there are tiny dim lights all over that are enough for us to tiptoe our way up two flights of stairs. My heart is racing, and my hand starts to sweat in his hand. My mind is racing, with all kinds of thoughts about how this is not a good idea, but my insides seem to have taken over my brain, and in seconds, we're walking up a short flight of concrete steps to the roof of his house. There's no ladder, no rusty metal door, no tar or blue tarp here. It's as if this is a whole backyard, complete with a wide canopy, outdoor furniture, plants, and a string of gold and silver Christmas lights that Darius turns on from some hidden spot. It all takes my breath away. Wow, I whisper. I didn't know all this was up here. You thought you knew everything, huh? Darius says. He sits down on a wicker couch in the middle of the roof. There's also a rug and a wicker coffee table. It's a straight-up whole other apartment on his roof. Yeah, I say, nodding. I did. He laughs and motions with his head for me to join him. I don't think twice about it, because the sky here seems wider, and maybe there are more stars from this view, and maybe the moon shines brighter. Maybe everything is better from the roof of the Darcy house. He eases closest to me when I sit down. We're quiet for a long moment, and I realize I can see the top of my building from here. Did you ever see? I start to ask. Yep, he says. You and Janae would just sit there and laugh and probably talk about me and Ainsley. No, we weren't talking about you. I lie. You were trying to throw tiny meatballs at this house. You saw that? I laugh and cover my mouth. I saw you, he says quietly. I just stare at him when he says this, and he stares back. Neither of us looks away. Zizi, girl in the hood, he says. Darius Dorky, I say. He laughs. Dorky? I'm Dorky. Yes, you are, I laugh. I'm fidgeting with my hands again, and he takes one of them. Zuri, I'm not going to try to be hard or pretend I'm from the hood. My parents protected us from all that. They raised us how they were raised. I mean, you met my grandmother. She has big dreams for me and Ainsley. I can't help that, and I can't change that. He slips his fingers in between mine, and I let him. It's as if I've been holding a weapon all this time, ready to defend myself if he said anything wrong, and he just pulled it out of my hand, disarming me. I don't know about that life, Darius. That run-down building over there has been my home since forever. My parents work hard, too, and they do not treat people like shit. Nobody on my block does, and if they do, there's somebody to call them out on it. We're like family. You treated me and my sisters like shit, and I needed to call you out on it, and I can't help that or change that. But I wasn't... He pulls my hand toward him a little bit. Darius. You judged me, too. You treated me and my brother like shit, too. Now he places his other hand over mine. No, I wasn't. Zuri. Okay, fine, I say. Can we start over? He asks. Then he brings my hand to his lips and kisses it. My insides turn warm, and there's nothing left to do but close my eyes and let my whole self melt in his hands, against his lips. No, we cannot, I whisper. We're not gonna just throw away the past as if it meant nothing. See? That's what happens to whole neighborhoods. We built something. It was messy, but we're not gonna throw it away. Touché. I like that analogy. He squeezes my hand a little. I wasn't trying to impress you, I say. Well, I've been impressed. From day one. He turns his whole body to me now, still with my hand in his. I slowly pull my hand away from his. But I live in your neighborhood. I haven't thrown anything or anyone away. I close my eyes for a moment and inhale. Do you see that rent is going up all over the place and people are not getting paid more? Schools are shitty because teachers think we're a lost cause. I'm trying to get into college, but I need financial aid and scholarships because I have 3 more sisters who want to go to college too, and my parents have always been broke. That's why I had a wall up with you. You were moving into my hood from what seemed like a whole different world. We're both quiet for a long minute before he says, I understand, but it's not like I have it easy either. Darius, if my family had your kind of money and this kind of house, my whole life would have been different. After what feels like forever, he says, I never told you this, but we left our apartment on the Upper East Side because the neighbors had concerns about me and Ainsley. We had lived there since we were toddlers. Everybody thought we were cute when we were in the 3rd grade, but once we got taller and got some bass in our voices, they decided that they didn't recognize us anymore. So we decided to move. But I don't know. Sometimes I still feel like I don't belong in Bushwick either. I don't fit in anywhere. But I don't want you to, Darius. I just want you to be you and me to be me. I wrap my fingers through his. He smiles, just a little bit. If you say so, he says. What do we do now, then? I ask. I have an idea, he says. He's closer to me now. Our legs are touching. And finally he leans in and kisses me. He eases his fingers across my cheek, up around my neck, toward the back of my head, and through the tight coils of my hair. He cradles my head in his hands, and he kisses me deep, deep. I am honey again. It all feels like the end of a game that we didn't even know we were playing, and we've both had the ball stolen and thrown back, played defense and offense, and from the way he kisses me, easing his bruised hand around my body and pulling me in close, almost swallowing me with his whole self, I know that I've won this game, and he's won too. I almost fall asleep in Darius's arms, on this roof, across the street from my own building. The nearby sirens will put me into an even deeper sleep if I let them, but it's the flashing lights behind my closed eyelids that make me pull away from Darius's warmth and slow-beating heart. He's awake too, squinting. "I think there's an ambulance in front of your building," he says. "Oh, shit," I say, and I'm on my feet and ready to rush down from the roof, but he quickly gets in front of me to open the door.
"Darius? Is that you?"
his mother calls out from a nearby room when we reach the second floor. "Yeah, Mom," he says. "Was just hanging out on the roof for a bit, going to bed." His mother says goodnight, and we tiptoe back down to the basement, where Layla's just starting to toss about.
"Layla, we gotta go," I say, nudging her.
She gets up groggy and confused, but Darius helps us up the stairs and out the door. We have to decide in a split second whether or not he'll walk me across the street. "I'm coming with you," he says. I nod and swallow hard. Just as we come around his house, I spot Mama and Papi in our open doorway as two EMT workers bring a stretcher down the front stoop. There's a body on that stretcher. I look at Mama and Papi, and it takes me a second to make sure that they're both standing there and not on that stretcher. My heart sinks, and I'm frozen where I stand, with Layla leaning her head on my shoulder.
"What's going on?"
she asks, slowly pulling away from me. Then it hits her.
"Oh my God, no!"
She rushes across the street, and it takes me a while to follow her because my legs feel like tree trunks. I can't move them. Marisol, Kayla, and Janae come out of the building. Janae is the first to spot me across the street, and she motions for me to hurry up. I once asked Madrina how she knows so much about the strangers who come down to the basement for her love consultations. She told me that thoughts and feelings are vibrations. They move the air like a light breeze, and if I pay close enough attention, I can feel those thoughts in my own body. So even with the white sheet covering her whole body and her face, I already know, and I'm the first to fall to my knees and start crying. Never in my life have I wanted to disappear into thin air as I do now. But not because Papi's eyes have disappointment written all over them. Not because Mama's eyes are red and teary, and she doesn't even look at me or Darius. Not because my sisters try to console me, and even Janae comes down to the ground with me and hugs me tight. I was on the roof with Darius when Madrina's spirit left the world. Our bodies were glued together, and I was happy for a little while. But I didn't know that this deep sadness was waiting for me like an open door. And then I think that it was maybe Madrina, priestess of the love goddess Ochun, who made it so. She gave me that little bit of happiness.
27. Elegy for Paola Esperanza Negron. Or, Ay Madrina, mi Madrina.
Ay Madrina, mi Madrina. The very last drumbeat has left its mark. Its pulsing rhythm leaves no sound, like blown-out candles in the dark. The singing voices muted, the quiet prayers unheard. The orishas have retreated, your shining light now blurred. Pero mi corazón, the only music left against the melody of my own song to my sweet Ochun of love bereft. Ay, Madrina, mi Madrina, who will clear these lovers' paths to walk these noisy streets where toppled buildings unearth our wrath? Newcomers fill these spaces with shiny jewels and polished stone. We blacks and browns have surrendered while our memory stands alone. Ahora, Madrina, querida abuela, this is the greatest theft. Los antepasados have stolen you. from my sweet Ochun of love bereft. I get applause after reading my poem, the loudest from Colin, who gives a whistle. Every word rolled out of my mouth heavy and hard, like the round red and white mint candies Madrina used to give me. I take my seat in the front row pew. There's standing room only at St. Martin of Tours Roman Catholic Church on Hancock Street, and it's a sea of all shades of brown people wearing either black or white. The ones who wear black are just following the Catholic tradition. The ones who wear white are following the Santeria tradition. But everyone's here to celebrate Madrina in their own special way. I too am dressed in all white from head to toe, and Madrina would have liked that. My hair is wrapped beneath one of her headscarves. And even though I'm not supposed to wear them, because a santera or santero hasn't blessed them and I haven't made ocha, her colorful eleques hang long around my neck, every single one of them, and I'll cut my eyes at any santero who questions me. I know almost everybody who's come to her funeral, including Darius, who walked in while I was reciting my poem. I had to pause for a long second, almost forgetting the words that were right there on the page. Afterward, Mama opens up our apartment and the whole block for the repast. She's been cooking for 3 days, and my sisters and I have been helping her. And when the church doors open so everyone can make their way to our building, I hear the congas. My heart leaps. Bobito, Manny, and Wayne have gathered about a dozen drummers to play outside the church. I take Darius's hand so everyone around can see that we're together, and we walk toward the drums. The santeras do a little two-step as they lead the procession from the church to our building. They smile at me and Darius as we walk hand in hand. Paola has blessed you before she left this side, I see, one of them says to me. I only smile and glance at Darius. Janae is waiting for me at the corner of Knickerbocker. She looks at both of our faces, and I can't tell if she's happy for us or not. But still, she smiles big and wide when I get closer to her. I let go of Darius's hand so my sister and I can hug. Practically the whole neighborhood has come out to celebrate Madrina's life, and this is almost like a parade for her. How you holding up, sis? Charlize asks when she joins us. I know Colin is taking it rough. Madrina was like his real mom. I can't believe she left in the building. And for her to go, she snaps her fingers, just like that. I shrug and twist my mouth and look around for Colin. I spot him and Papi having a conversation. Papi's body language is telling a story. He's talking with his hands, something he only does when he's really pissed. And he rarely gets really pissed. Colin hangs his head low, a stance I've never seen him take before. Then Papi reaches out and touches his shoulder in a father-son way. Without thinking twice about it, I start to make my way over there, leaving Darius with Charlize. But by the time I reach them, the conversation is already over. Hey, is all I say to Colin. He's got a look on his face I've never seen before. His brows are furrowed and his arms are crossed. Hey, Zuri. He almost whispers. Then he flashes me a half smile and walks away. Papi, what happened between you and Colin? I ask. He's running his hands through his thick, curly hair, and he sighs deeply. It's okay, Zuri. Go be with your friends. He takes a look around at all the people gathered on the sidewalk in front of our building and the people walking down from Bushwick Avenue in Jefferson. He rubs his graying beard and sighs again. Papi, I know when you're not okay, I say. Ah, my Zuri Luz, always watching out for your papi, huh? He says, giving my shoulder a squeeze. What are you talking about? What just happened? Let's go for a walk, he says, motioning for me to follow him. Suddenly I'm nervous. Papi is not the kind of man to just go for a stroll. We walk down Jefferson as he waves and says hi to neighbors and friends. She's singing and dancing in heaven now, he says, when they give him their condolences for Madrina. We weren't her family, but besides Colin, we were the closest thing she had. When we're past Broadway, Papi sighs for the umpteenth time and says, Colin's selling the building. A developer offered him a lot of money. I quickly look up. What?
I don't understand what he's saying.
We have to move, Zuri.
Move? We can't just leave.
My stomach twists as the words come tumbling out of my mouth. Warm tears sting my eyes. I've lost my madrina, and now I'm going to lose my home?
Mija, don't get emotional on me, Zuri. I agreed to the buyout. We need it.
I gasp and stop walking. Out of all the things Papi could have said, I never imagined those words.
A developer? A buyout? Of course, after Madrina died, I wonder who would take care of the building, but I thought Colin would just be our landlord. Not that he'd sell to an outsider.
Buyout? You sold us out, Papi?
We need that money, sweetheart, for our future. I got 5 of you to take care of. A building is just a building in the end.
But how could you? Just like that.
I mumble, tears now streaming freely down my cheeks. Papi pulls me close into a hug, but I am stiff in my father's arms and angry.
Well, I had to curse him out 1 or 2 times, 'cause you know how your papi is. We Benitez's don't take no crap. He gave me a good price, and that was that.
He looks down at me and holds me tighter. I start to relax and use his good white shirt to wipe away my tears.
But Papi, where are we gonna go?
He lets go of me and shakes his head.
I don't know yet, but we'll find somewhere.
This is what happens in life. You take the good with the bad. The money is good. Us leaving is bad. But we're taking it because it's a blessing. You know, like that boy across the street.
I inhale deep, sniffling, and roll my eyes.
You don't know anything about the boy across the street, Papi. Now don't change the subject.
No secrets in our house, Zuri. You like him. Fine. As long as he likes you too, and most important, he respects you.
But he gets to stay, Papi, I say quietly, and I realize that Darius will no longer be the boy across the street. He'll still be in Bushwick, and I'll be somewhere else, because the rent is too high in my own hood.
So?
And you get to leave. Him and his family are living somewhere new. They get to have new experiences. And you and your sisters, you've been in Bushwick all your lives. I saw that look in Janae's eyes when she came back from college. Her eyes have seen so much more than me and your mother ever have.
And you, sweetheart. You were a light bulb when you came back from D.C.
That is what I want for all of you.
And myself, too. To think, I spent half my life in that tiny apartment, and now money has fallen from the sky.
I don't like what Papi is saying one bit. He makes sense, but I still don't like it.
What's Colin gonna do with the money anyway? He's only 19, I say.
A lump is forming in my throat, but I keep swallowing to keep my tears down. According to him, Madrina has been getting offers for years. Someone came to him with a deal he couldn't refuse. All cash.
Look, Zuri, keep your head up, my daughter. I used to be like you, you know, getting pissed at the world when this or that didn't go my way. But you know what opened up my eyes and my heart? Your mother and 5 beautiful daughters. The world could fall apart around me, but we are still a family. It doesn't matter where we go. Bushwick will come with us. Don't let your pride get in the way of your heart, mija. He turns to look at me.
With every word he says, the tears start to well up in my eyes again. I keep blinking them back, but my face is wet.
Hey, mija, Papi says, holding me by the shoulders so that he can look me straight in the eye.
I knew it would be you to take it the hardest.
It's a lot, Zuri. First Madrina, and now this. But you gotta grow up. It's a big world out there.
I can't help but laugh a little, even as tears roll down my cheeks.
That was corny, Papi.
And then I let it all out. I hang my head low, and the tears fall like rain. I cross my arms.
No, 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 he says. Not out here, and not like this.
We've walked about 10 blocks, and I realize where Papi's going. He's headed for the library on DeKalb and Bushwick, our favorite spot. This is where he'd take me when I was little.
I'd disappear into the kids' section, and he'd disappear between any and every aisle of thick books. But it's Sunday, and we can tell from the tall and wide windows that the lights are off and it's closed. The gate leading up to the front steps is wide open, though, so we walk in and sit there. "You don't want to leave that boy?" Papi asks. "Darius?" "Papi," I say, "I don't want to leave our hood, our building, our home." "And that boy," he says. Papi knows me through and through, so I hide my face in my hands, not wanting to believe that he's right. "It's more than the boy," I mumble. I look up at him. "Papi, if we could just live on only one floor of his house." "It's not our house and it's not our life. And who knows? Maybe being here was a tough decision for them too. I mean, it's not like they fit in, you know? And maybe with that buyout money and all, we'll be the new rich kids on the block. ¿Entiendes?" I laugh a little again, and Papi places his arm around my shoulders and I lean into him. He kisses my forehead and his beard grazes my skin. I have always thought of Bushwick as home, but in that moment, I realize that home is where the people I love are, wherever that is.
28.
As my sisters begin packing, I spend as much time at the library on Bushwick Avenue as I possibly can. I sit in corners, at tables, on dirty couches, and on the front steps, getting lost in the pages of books. But most important, I work on my essay for Howard University. College is the one true thing I can hold on to. It's going to happen no matter what. But I can either stay here in Brooklyn and go to a community college, or one of the city university schools, or go away. And the only option I've given myself for going away is Howard. I have to make this happen for myself. If I get in, then I'll know that people like me have a say in how our lives turn out. Even if we're thrown away by people with more money, we can always climb our way out of the messiness and the brokenness of our lives. Because the thing about sharp corners is, the right turns can bring you back home. I print out my 500-word essay just as the security guard announces that it's 5 minutes till closing. I don't write a poem after all, but poetry has helped me get my feelings out. My broken words helped me make sense of everything, so that when I pieced them back together in an essay, my truth was clearer. I place everything into a folder on my thumb drive with all my other application materials for early acceptance. But before I close it, I start a new document and get some last words out. Pride, by Zuri Benitez. We were not supposed to be proud. We were not supposed to love these things so hard. The chipping paint, the missing floorboards, the gas stove we have to light with matches, the cracks in the windows, the moldy bathroom tiles, the mice and the roaches. But I've never known anything else. These broken things all spell home to me. They are like the many worn sheets and blankets Mama and Papi brought with them from their childhood. They are older than us, and there are stories lodged in their cracks and crevices, their stains and their tears. And if I listen closely enough, I can hear the whispers of those who came before us. They've left these holes for us to fill. Ambulance sirens at night put me to sleep. Cars honking and neighbors cursing at each other let me know that love lives here. We care enough to be angry and impatient. Sometimes I wonder, if my neighborhood ever floods or breaks in half and someone throws me, only me, a lifeboat or a lifeline, will I take it and leave everyone and everything behind? This college is a lifeboat and a lifeline. But my neighborhood is not flooding or splitting in half. It's being cleaned up and wiped out. It's being polished and erased. So where do I reach back and pull out memories as if they've been safely tucked away into a trunk or an attic like the people on TV who have enough time and too much space? Where do I call home? Where can I place a layer of brick to use as my platform and hold my head up high to raise my voice and my fist? Sometimes love is not enough to keep a community together. There needs to be something more tangible, like fair housing, opportunities, and access to resources. Lifeboats and lifelines are not supposed to just be a way for us to get out. They should be ways to let us stay in and survive. And thrive.
I pause in my typing and look up. All around me, a slight breeze brushes past the back of my neck, and my whole body tingles. It's not like Darius's touch at all. It's more like a presence of something or someone on another side of this reality. And that's when I know for sure that all of Madrina's stories about los antepasados are as real as breath. She is still as real as breath. She is love. She is with me. Me, daughter of Ochum. 29.
We don't know how to move. We don't know how to pack up our lives into small, medium, and large cardboard boxes. Mama wants to keep every single thing. Baby clothes, our drawings from kindergarten, our cheap Barbie doll knockoffs. Papi wants to throw out everything, and he does it. But behind Mama's back, so that each time she thinks a box is full and ready to be taped closed, she goes off somewhere and comes back only to find it half empty again. And the last few days have shown me what our family is really made of. We are our memories, our love, and our things. It's the last day before Janae goes back up to Syracuse. She's taking a box of her favorite things with her, afraid that Papi will throw them out. Me, Nene, Marisol, and the twins are squeezed together on the front stoop. We used to all fit on one step with our thin thighs and shoulders touching, then on two steps. Now, Layla sits on the step below, with her head resting on my right knee as I cornrow her hair. She digs into a small bag of sunflower seeds and spits out the shells on the ground next to the stoop. One lands on Marisol's arm, and she smacks Layla's knee. That would usually turn into an argument, but today, we all know that we don't want to spend this last moment arguing. It's unusually quiet for a Saturday afternoon, but part of me wonders if the whole block is a little sad that we're leaving. Charlize has already left for Duke, so she's not here to crack jokes and cheer us up a bit. People have come in and out of our building, saying their goodbyes to Mama and Papi, and paying their final respects to Madrina's basement. And maybe this quiet, sunny, warm Saturday afternoon is a long, heavy sigh. And that's exactly what I do as I finish Layla's final braid. In that same moment, the front door to the Darcy's house opens up, and I pretend not to notice, even as all my sisters turn to watch my reaction. But it's Ainsley who walks out of the building, not Darius. Ainsley comes over to us the same way Darius usually does, with his hands in his pockets and his shoulders slightly hunched over. But he doesn't share the same hard jawline as Darius. His smile is crooked, his eyes are bright, and his fresh haircut makes him look kind of nerdy. A cute kind of nerdy. In that moment, I realized that Ainsley just might be perfect for my sister Janae. We all pretend not to be paying him any mind. I brush back Layla's edges. Kayla investigates a sunflower seed. Marisol reads her Susie Orman book. And Janae pretends to be on the phone. But she's not a good actress because she's trying too hard to keep it cool. Hey, Ainsley says to Janae, or all of us. He faces Janae, but he doesn't know which one of us to look at. Hey, Janae says back. Let's go up to the roof, I say. It's too hot down here. Nuh-uh, it's hotter on the roof because we're closer to the sun, Layla says without budging, and I pinch her arm. Let's go, I say through clenched teeth. Marisol shakes her head and rolls her eyes at Janae. But she's the first one up the stairs with me and the twins behind her. Why we gotta be the ones to leave? Kayla nags. We should have that Darcy boy let us stay in his house with that air conditioner if he wants to talk to Janae. That's a good idea, Marisol adds as she opens the door leading up to the roof. It'll be like charging money. 1 hour with Janae costs 1 hour of going through that big old fridge of theirs. Papi opens the door to the apartment to check in on us. He has on a mask and gloves while he and Mama clear out the dust from behind the furniture. They wanted us out of the way because we talk and argue too much. He wanted Mama out of the way too, but she got hip to his game of throwing things out behind her back. Please, nobody fall, okay? He says through the mask. Madrina's watching over us, I say to him with a smile. His eyes smile, and he shakes his head. Something is a little bit different about my father now. He's a little happier, a little lighter. This move will be good for him. On the roof, my sisters ease toward the edge, trying to eavesdrop on Janae and Ainsley's conversation. But I keep looking at the house across the street, wondering if Darius is looking over at us too. He's leaving, Layla says. Then she calls out, "Bye, Ainsley!" I see him wave back from across the street, and I glance at the Darcy's roof again, wondering if Darius was watching it all go down too. In no time, Janae joins us with a big smile on her face. "He offered to drive me up to school," she says, with a soft, sweet voice. "What?" I ask, walking over to her. "His school, Cornell, is about an hour away from Syracuse, so we can go up together. I'll have to squeeze my stuff into his back seat, but..." She's grinning hard, clasping her hands, and almost standing on her tippy toes as if she's a rocket ship about to be launched to the moon. She's about to straight up burst with happiness. So I hug her. "Take it slow, okay?" I whisper. "Z, I have a really good feeling about this," she says, inhaling deep. "Janae and Ainsley sitting in a tree," Kayla starts singing as she pulls out the blue tarp for all of us to sit on. "K-I-S-S-I-N-G," Layla adds. "First comes love, then comes marriage." Janae sits down on the tarp first, rests her chin in her hand, and with a big smile says, "Go on." "No, stop," I say. "Don't go on. No love, no marriage, and no baby, Janae." "Okay, maybe a little bit of love, but no marriage and no baby. It's just a song," she says, laughing. I roll my eyes at her as we all squeeze onto the tarp one last time. I put my arm around Janae and Marisol on the other side of me. We all squeeze in tight, resting our heads on each other's shoulders as the late summer sun sets over Bushwick. The orange sky seems to stretch farther than it ever has. We stay quiet, even the chatty twins, saying our goodbyes like silent prayers. Each of my sisters leaves one by one, leaving me and Janae to ourselves for the rest of the night. A full moon is out tonight, and this moment feels just as full, almost pregnant, like our new life is about to be born as we move to Canarsie. Ainsley is the first thing Janae brings up when we're finally alone. "Fine, okay, I do think you two make a cute couple," I say, sighing. "You and Darius look good together too," she says, leaning her head on my shoulder. "I don't care if we look good together. I care if he's a good person or not." "Well, is he?" I look across the street. I close my eyes for a minute to see if I can feel Darius watching us from his roof. Madrina always said that love connects to people in ways that we can't even see, but we feel it. I shake that thought from my head and open my eyes because this isn't love. Not yet, anyway. So I say to Janae, "I don't know. We'll see." "Well, how long are you giving him? A few days, months, years, a lifetime? How long did you give Ainsley?" "Long enough for him to come to his senses." "What if he never did? What if he never said a word to you before you left for Syracuse?" She inhales deep and waits a long minute before she answers my question. "He would have. If not today, then I would have seen him again. Even if it took a few more months or years, I just knew. Madrina would know." It's the middle of the night, and our bedroom is almost emptied out, with only a few open boxes left. Our mattresses had to be wrapped in plastic and stacked in the living room for the movers in the morning, so we lie on blankets, but I can't sleep. I sneak down to Madrina's apartment, where the door is unlocked and is completely empty, but her scent still lingers in the air, cigar and sage smoke, Florida water, incense, and cheap perfume.
These smells are even stronger as I make my way down to the basement. This is no longer Madrina's temple for Ochun. It's as if everything has been poured out into a flowing river. But Madrina's chair is still there. Stripped of its white fabric and yellow cushion, it's more like a skeleton of itself. I sit in it and fold my hands over my belly, just like Madrina used to. I lean my head back and close my eyes to hear her voice one last time. Ah, mija, there you go. Rivers flow. A body of water that remains stagnant is just a cesspool, mi amor. It's time to move, flow, grow. That is the nature of rivers. That is the nature of love.
30. Everyone is downstairs, waiting for the moving truck to pull off, and I'm the last to take a tour of the place before I say goodbye forever. I finger a layer of dust on my bedroom windowsill. Our apartment looks way bigger without all the furniture and stuff, and much more broken, too. There are cracks in the walls, mold, chipping paint. This crowded apartment probably wasn't good for our health. The kitchen looks even smaller, though. I can't believe that Mama has cooked all those meals, enough to feed a whole block in that tiny kitchen. The stove and countertops have been scrubbed clean, and I wonder if it will all be torn away to make room for a bigger kitchen, like the one at Darius's house. I take another look at the whole apartment, inhale deep, step outside, and close the door. I did not want to cry, but the tears burst out of me like a newly opened fire hydrant in the summer. I hug myself and press my head against the closed door. All of me, everything I've ever known and loved, was once behind that door. I feel as if I've stepped outside my own body, and I'm leaving it behind. Zuri? Someone says my name quietly. I sniff and try to hold back my tears, but I can't. I don't turn around to see who it is, but I know the voice. I don't dare move. He touches my shoulder. Still, I don't move. Hey. He gently turns me around. I cross my arms and don't look up at him. He pulls me in, hugs me, and kisses my forehead, so I just let it all out again, in his chest, in his arms. I pull away from him a little and look into his eyes. He wipes the tears from my cheeks with his thumbs and kisses me on the lips. The very last thing I do in this building is kiss a boy, the boy who moved in across the street and changed everything. Maybe this is what Madrina wanted all along, for me to find love and take it with me when I leave this place. So we walk down the steps and out of the building hand in hand. Half our block is out on the sidewalk, saying goodbye to my sisters, Mama, and Papi. They all turn to see me and Darius holding hands again. Of course, they all have to comment all at once. Some whistle, others cheer, and the rest of them laugh, as if we're 5-year-olds and this little thing is cute but won't last. I catch Papi's eyes smiling. He quietly nods and turns away. Manny from down the block has offered his minivan to drive Mama and my sisters out to our new place. I got dibs on riding with Papi in the moving truck. Before I hop onto the middle seat between the mover and Papi, Darius pulls me aside again. I can come pick you up, take a long drive through Brooklyn, from Canarsie all the way to Brooklyn Heights. Nah, I say, shaking my head. I am not your Brooklyn tour guide, Darius Darcy. You want to come pick me up? Take the train. How about a cab? No, Darius, the subway. Last stop on the L. You're in Brooklyn now. Last stop on the L. He repeats, smiling, and takes the tips of my fingers until I climb into the truck. Papi takes his hand and gives him a hard dap. You take care, okay, buddy? Then Papi pulls Darius in and gives him one of those homie hugs. This is the thing that melts my heart the most. It's as if my whole neighborhood has said yes to the boy who moved in across the street, to me and him. Papi, I met this boy. Even though he's not old enough yet, I know you will tell him to get a case of Presidente beer from Hernando's.
to share on the stoop one last time with this boy who likes your daughter because you will hope that he has a heart big enough to love me much more than you because this is what you want for all of us, Papi. You want your daughter's boyfriends to have wisdom as layered as pages in a book, memories as old as slave ships at the shores of Hispaniola, and love as endless as bottles of Presidente beer shared on the stoops all over Bushwick late into the night, Papi. I met this boy. Canarsie really is the very edge of the world, or at least Brooklyn. It feels that way since it takes so long for me to get to and from my old neighborhood. My sisters and I have to leave the house by 6:30 in the morning just to get to school on time. Canarsie is the first and last stop on the L train, just like Darius said. My new hood is nothing like my old hood. If there are newcomers here, they're Black or Latinx like our family. No one is coming here to throw anything away. There's room to spread my arms and not hit anybody in the head. I can go a whole day sitting in front of the house and only see about 5 people. But no one sits on stoops here. No one pulls out a barbecue grill on the sidewalk or a small table for a game of dominoes. The bodega is more than 5 blocks away, and we have to drive to the closest supermarket or laundromat. But Mama and Papi still don't know how to drive and don't have a car. So most of our days are spent commuting to and from everywhere and stuck inside the small 2-story house minding our own business. Marisol and the twins spend more time at school with extracurricular activities, and Mama cooks way too much food since our kitchen is much bigger now. Howard has my new address, and they've been filling our mailbox with catalogs and postcards. I take that as a good sign. We have more space and less time. And the love we had for our whole neighborhood now only fits into this wood frame house in the middle of a quiet block. We don't know the people who live across the street or on either side of us. After my first day of senior year, I take a trip to my old block. Darius has been wanting to come see me, but we still had boxes and I was still trying to make sense of it all. I wanted more than anything to step back onto Jefferson and Bushwick Avenues, but only when I knew I was ready. Darius meets me at the Halsey Street and Wyckoff Avenue station of the L train. It's as if he hasn't seen me in years, the way he hugs me and lifts me off my feet. We walk through my old hood, hand in hand, talking small talk about school, college, SATs, and Bushwick. I can spot the renovations happening to our old building from a block away. The windows have been taken out, and the whole inside of the building has been gutted. My stomach sinks, and a wave of sadness makes me want to fall to the ground and wail. Darius squeezes my hand. "Do you know who bought it?" I ask. "Does it matter?" he says. "Yeah. You might not like your new neighbors." I smile. "You're right. There'll probably be some rich white girl who'll be afraid of me, and then she'll realize that I'm not that bad since I go to private school and all, and we'll fall madly in love and the rest is history." "Why are you trying to put that out there like that, Darius? Are you jealous?" "Hell yeah," I say. "Well, don't be, because I want to show you something." We get closer to my old building, and I notice that the crumbling sidewalk has been repaved. A tree stump that used to be there is now gone, and so is the rickety gate. My heart feels like it's about to split in half. In about a year, I won't recognize this place. Darius pulls my hand and crouches down on the ground right in front of the building, and I immediately start laughing. "What are you doing?" I ask. "It's the corniest and sweetest thing I've ever seen. In elementary school, we'd spray paint on the handball wall or on the park bench. But since sidewalks don't usually get paved in this part of the hood, initials carved into the concrete are something I don't usually see. I wish I could have showed off my artistic skills a little better," Darius says with a huge smile on his face. "But I know you want me to K-I-S-S. Boy, I am not crouching down on that ground to kiss you," I say laughing. "No, I just kept it simple, stupid. K-I-S-S. He grins from ear to ear, as if he just said the cleverest thing. "You know what? With all that fancy education, you sure know how to keep it original." "I try," he says. "So, do you like?" Right there, in the front of the place I used to call home, the place I spent the first 17 years of my life,
are the letters and words Z and D forever inside a heart with an arrow. I love it, I say, taking his hand as he gets up from the ground. So, forever? Forever, he says, slipping his arms around my waist. Well, that will be there forever if they don't repave it. He tries to hold in a laugh. I punch him lightly on the arm and say, You wish it could be there forever, Darius Darcy. I wrap my arms around his shoulders, pull him in, and give Darius a deep, long kiss for what feels like forever. This is Elizabeth Acevedo. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Pride by E.B. Zaboy, presented by Balzer & Bray and Harper Audio. This program was recorded at Clean Cut Studios in Washington, D.C., engineered by Patrick Stratton, and was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer and director, Caitlin Garing. Text copyright 2018 by Alloy Entertainment and E.B. Zaboy. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers, all rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.